And I'm going to read the scripture to you from Luke 17, 1 through 19. And as I read it, I would like for you to try to imagine yourself with Jesus walking between Galilee and Samaria with his disciples. I assume it might be hot. It might be sunny. They might be thirsty and dusty. We don't know how far they've come. We don't know how far they're going. But they're really itinerant people walking through Galilee, Samaria, and the area with Jesus trying to tell people what it is God expects them to do. And we pick it up with they're on their way to Jerusalem. And Jerusalem's quite a way south, so they had a long way to go. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." We're going to be talking this morning about how much faith it takes to be able to face the world that we now live in. Just as Jesus told the disciples, if we had the faith of a mustard seed, we could tell a tree to go into the ocean, and it would do so. There was a story once about a man who heard that in church and went home and said, "I don't like you." The locust tree had out in the field. He said, "When I wake up in the morning, I want you to be gone." And he got up the next morning and he looked out and he said, "I didn't think you'd go anywhere." I don't think he expected it, you know, and I don't think we're testing God with that. I think what the man was supposed to learn was what I shared with the children. If we have faith in God, we can do anything. We can trust God to do it. It's not us. We aren't the ones who are doing it. It's God who is doing it, not us. I'd like for you to try to put yourself back in the area between Samaria and Galilee with Jesus and the disciples. And I don't know how much you know about leprosy, but one of the reasons the lepers approached Jesus as he was entering the village was that they could not live in the village. Lepers were to stay at least 50 yards away from anybody healthy, and they were, as they went walking, they were to yell, "Unclean, unclean," as they went to warn people that they were lepers and no one was to be around them. So they probably didn't get very close to Jesus to ask him to help them, but they had faith that he could do so. Now, today we think maybe the leprosy described in the Bible is not the leprosy that we are familiar with today. Leprosy today, we know, is caused by a bacteria. And the leprosy back then, a lot of people did not get it. In fact, the Center for Disease Control tells us that today, only 5% of the entire world's population is even susceptible to leprosy. Most of us have a natural immunity to it. But back then, lepers could not work. They couldn't go to church. They couldn't be in towns. They couldn't be around other people. And so they had to depend upon the generosity of travelers. They usually made camps beside roads outside the entrances to town so that people coming and going could hopefully give them food and help them in some way. They were ostracized, totally ostracized from any community living. And I don't know about you, but boy, that would not feel good to not be able to be around anyone, family, or anyone else. in times of disaster, you and I know that people come together. Have you been looking and seeing the shelters down in Florida, the Carolinas, and Georgia, and people are moving in together in shelters, supporting one another and having a place to stay? And the same is true of the lepers. There was a disaster if you had leprosy, and they gathered with other lepers and supported one another. Strange bedfellows, because 9 were Jews and 1 was a Samaritan. But he was with them. And if you know anything about the Jewish people and the Samaritan people, it's kind of like the Disciples of Christ Christians and the other Christian churches. Once we were friends and once we worshiped together, and then we had a disagreement and we split up and we do our own thing in the way that we think best. And that's the way it was with the Samaritans and the Jews. Once they were together, but they no longer were together at all. So that a Samaritan was with the Jews is unusual. If you look at refugee camps, the gathering there is unusual in the same way, in that you have farmers, you have shepherds, you have professional people dumped in these refugee camps together, hopefully helping one another. And that's what the lepers were doing too. Fred Craddock, who's one of the greatest disciples preachers who ever lived, says that Luke may have creatively placed this story on the border between Galilee and Samaria so he could include the Samaritan leper as a lesson to his Jewish listeners who had begun dangerously substituting entitlement for gratitude. Whatever Luke's intention and whatever license he took with the geographical placement of Jesus' encounter with the 10 lepers, we see in Jesus' action compassion and healing for everyone, not just the Jews, for a Gentile. Jesus made certain to tell the group to head for the temple, because it didn't matter if he healed their leprosy. If the priest did not do a ritual cleansing, they still could not go home. And Jesus followed Leviticus in his life. He was a good Jew. He knew he had to send the lepers to the temple to be ritually clean. And they weren't healed until they were on the way to the temple. Now, I think it's rather puzzling, because the Samaritan would not have headed for the Jewish temple. Healed or not, he would not have been welcome. And the temple for the Samaritan was way up in Samaria, far from where they were. So we have the lepers here with Jesus close to the border, and we have the Samaritan temple way north and the Jewish temple way south. And the Jewish people were headed to their temple for their ritual cleansing. The Samaritan, when he was cleansed, turned around, and I kind of think maybe he was headed for his temple when he ran into Jesus again and said, thank you. Now, Luke was making a point, so what I think is not important. What Luke thinks is what is important. That Samaritan said, I'm healed. And he came back, and he prostrated himself in front of Jesus. Maybe the 9 Jewish lepers, upon realizing they were healed, were too anxious to go home, to go back and say thanks. Whatever, they headed for the temple without coming back. There's lots of puzzles in this scripture, and we're not told exactly what was going on and why the 10 Jewish people did not thank Jesus. We weren't told why the Samaritan did. We're just told the facts that they did. We do know that the Samaritan credited Jesus with his healing because he came back and thanked him. And before we get too smug about this, how many times have you and me, I'm just as guilty, prayed hard when you've been in trouble and then kind of forgot to say thank you when it all worked out? I think we're all guilty of that on occasion. Sometimes that's just the way it is. We forget to utter words of praise to God while we're always willing to utter words of fear and trembling and asking God's help. In Jesus' time, the temple was a place of healing. And Jesus took that healing show on the road. Jesus healed wherever he was. But because leprosy was such a scourge in that time, and so dangerous, and people were so afraid of it, he knew that the lepers would not be able to go home unless they went to the temple for the ritual healing. But Jesus, as he traveled in Jerusalem and Samaria, he created a community of healing wherever he went. Dear Abby, if any of you remember Dear Abby, has said, a church is a hospital for sinners, not a museum for saints. So I think Dear Abby thinks we're to create communities of healing where we find ourselves in the church. This brings to mind so much in today's culture and society that is in need of healing, from personal pains, heartaches, to the poor, the impoverished, the homeless, the unemployed, refugees, the mentally ill, the angry, on up to the planet on which we live, which certainly does need healing. I wonder how many of us see ourselves as part of the church as a community of healing. And if we looked at the church as a community of healing, how would that change the way we live out our faith? Well, in this scripture, 10 were healed, but only one expressed gratitude. That one, as I said, the reviled Samaritan. I think we can find some comfort in the fact that even though the 9 Jews did not return and say thank you, apparently they continued to be healed. Jesus didn't take it back. He healed them. John Shelby Spong, I don't know if any of you are familiar with Spong, but I like what Spong writes. John Shelby Spong said in his book, The Sin of Scripture, that Jesus was and is a person, a prophet, so different from the other prophets of his time because Jesus expanded his concept and our concept of humanity to include our enemies, our friends, those we love, those we just like, and those who would be otherwise objects of our prejudice and our scorn. Jesus, in healing the Samaritan, opens our eyes to those we least expect to belong in the community of faith. In healing the outcast, Jesus' actions show us that everyone is worthy of healing. Jesus showed us that with gratitude, obedience, and faithfulness, everyone is welcome at the table. The gratitude of the Samaritan reveals that not only was his heart changed, not only was his leprosy healed, but also his heart was changed. He was changed internally. And I think that may be what we're called to discover from this scripture. In our healing and in our faith, in our gratitude, we're not just to be thankful, but we are to have changed hearts. We get healed on the outside, and we are healed on the inside as well. And that healing is to be reflected in changed behavior, in us turning around and going and doing as the Samaritan did. I think Jesus is a compassionate healer, and I think Jesus heals without demanding our gratitude. But Luke tells us that gratitude comes as a result of a changed heart and leads to a changed life. As followers of the great healer, perhaps the best thing we can do is say thank you by sharing that healing with others. And just to be selfish for a moment, you know, I taught psychology at the college before I retired. Studies show that people who live lives of gratitude live longer lives, live healthier lives, live happier lives. People who live lives of gratitude are more optimistic, more positive in their outlook. People who express their gratitude have higher levels of optimism and lower levels of depression. Dr. Robert Emmons, in his book, Why Gratitude is Good, tells us that people who show gratitude are not looking at the world through rose-colored glasses. Being grateful doesn't mean you believe life is perfect. It doesn't ignore complaints, tragedy, illness, burdens, and life's hassles. However, living with an attitude of gratitude for all that we have and with hope for tomorrow, we are acknowledging that in the midst of these very complex, sometimes very difficult lives, we receive many gifts, both small gifts and large, from everyone around us and from our Creator. Meister Eckhart said, "If the only prayer you said in your